Welcome to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. Also, Dave Buhner in studio with us today as we discuss some more important issues out here in the eastern plains of Colorado. A safe distance from the demise of Western civilization. Son Daniel in studio with us this morning as we broadcast 80 countries around the world and all 50 states. It's great to have our listening audience tuning in to us as we discuss the state of our nation, the state of Western civilization, and the state of our children. I think, Dave, it's important to talk about children. You're raising five. I'm raising five. And according to this CNN article that came out a couple of days ago, CNN, it says the kids today, they're doing great. Kids are doing better than ever. State of Teens, Laura Sessions Stepp, writes that high school smoking and drinking has declined. Teenage pregnancies have declined remarkably. There's less teenage driving. There's less firearm-related deaths among teens, and suicide has declined. So apparently everybody's doing okay, Dave. You know, what are we doing? Complaining about the decline of Western civilization here. They're doing fine. What's going on here?
Well, you know, if you define raising a daughter as not seeing her get pregnant before she gets married, we're doing great.
She's getting her contraception. They're, you know, very, very, very reliable contraception. That's what they're talking about here. So fairly significant decline of teenage pregnancies since 1990, largely because they've got access to reliable contraception. So they're getting that contraception day. In the 1950s, less than a third of first births to teenage mothers were conceived out of wedlock. By the 1980s, close to two-thirds of all Caucasian teen mothers were unmarried when they became pregnant. And there are way, 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 way more kids having sex out of wedlock than there were back in the 1950s and 1960s. However, also, Dave, remember, you've got 7 to 8 times the incidence of homosexuality on these teenage, on these high school campuses than you saw in the 1990s.
But
so just in the last 20 years, okay, maybe there's a little less pregnancy. And here's one reason why there's less pregnancy. It's really, really hard for a girl to get pregnant if she's in a homosexual relationship. Do we have to get into this again?
No.
Okay, let's not get into it.
Not today.
But they're doing great.
No, they're not.
The teens are doing great.
Kevin, it says right here in the CNN article, there's a serious problem.
They're getting fatter.
They're getting fatter.
Yeah, I saw that. They're getting fatter.
So we're not. No, all things are not good here.
Yeah.
This is not perfect situation.
Yeah. And one
kids
reason
are
why
getting
there's,
fat.
There's a lot less violence is these
fat.
Kids are playing computer games. And remember that we have 20 times the boys on psychotropic drugs than were 20 years ago. 20 times the boys on psychotropic drugs than 20 years ago.
That's why they're not shooting each other.
Psychotropic drugs work.
Yeah, that's why they're not shooting each other.
I mean, the kids are doing great. They're on psychotropic drugs. Hey, good news. The kids are doing great. We got them on drugs. Dave, you know that's what's going to happen. When you get enough boys on drugs, they're not going to be robbing banks. They're not going to be beating up on their friends in the parking lot. They're dazed. They're in a drug stupor.
They're busy playing Farmville.
Yeah, or Farmville.
You know, so they're on their drugs, they're playing Farmville, but nobody's getting pregnant. Okay, they're getting a little fat.
They're getting fat.
They're not driving drunk. Well, except on the computer games.
And Dave, tell you the truth, I'd rather you had more teens driving, because if they're driving, they'd be working. I mean, you know, they're not working. They're not grown up by 30 years of age. 70% of young men not grown up by 30 years of age. But the teens are doing great. CNN News right here, friends. Teens are doing great today, better than ever. They're not growing up. 70% of young men not grown up by 30 years of age, up from 30% in 1970. They're not maturing. They're sitting around playing games while Rome burns. 20 times the incidence of psychotropic drugs for our young kids than were in the 1990s, but they're doing great. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm having a hard time getting excited about this, Dave. I'm just not getting excited about it. I don't see the point.
The point is, don't worry your pretty little head. The professionals are in control.
Okay.
I think that's the point from CNN. Don't worry your pretty little head, parents. The professionals
kids,
have got it all handled.
Professionals got it handled.
Okay,
don't
so
worry
they're a little
about
fat.
It. Professionals have got it handled. And on that note, we're going to talk about the recent Family Research Council report on parental involvement in education. The FRC still thinks it's important, and this report will blow your mind. In just a moment, the FRC report on parental authority over children's education. Stay with me. This is important.
always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trusteth to the book called the Scriptures, thou trusteth to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.
And we're back on the Generations Radio broadcast, friends, discussing the future of American culture and American children. Not doing well, as far as we're concerned, in the 2010s. But Dave, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of professionals out there that want to tell you things are going great. They've got control over the situation, and these kids, hey, no problems whatsoever.
Well, they do want to tell you things are going great. In fact, they're going so great they probably deserve a raise.
Yeah.
You know, because the unions, they're all about such things. But things aren't great. When we look at real objective measures, let's take academic measures, for instance, we see that children are doing worse now than they were 10 years ago, and 10 years ago they were doing worse than they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, Dave, I don't think we have the character we had in the 1880s. We don't have the character we had in the 1920s, 1940s, 1960s, 1980s. We're falling off the cliff when it comes to the character of this nation. Sexually, we're falling off the cliff. Okay, they're using contraception. They can, you know, find their contraceptive pills and swallow them in the morning. Okay, well, okay, if there's enough character to do that, then okay, maybe we've got a tiny little bit of character left. But, Dave, in terms of keeping God's commandments, if you define character by keeping God's commandments, which we do on this program, you've got a lot of kids fornicating, committing homosexual acts, et cetera, and this represents the breakdown of society. You're looking at sexual burnout. You're looking at the decline of character. You're looking at the economic burnout of a very burned-out, characterless society. I think that's where we are right now, largely because parents have not been involved in the raising of children. You have 64% of kids under six latchkey. 64% of kids under six latchkey, 70% of inner-city kids born without fathers, 12% of those kids in the prison system, and we've got the largest incarceration rate in the world here in America. Dave, I don't think we've got a really, really good situation here in this country. I think we're looking at the breakdown of the character of a nation, and we don't want to admit it.
Kevin, when you take one factor, and you take something that looks like a positive, we're having fewer babies out of wedlock in the teen years. Well, that's because of contraception. Now, the problem is we're having fewer babies.
Well,
not just in high school,
right,
we're having fewer babies.
We have
destroyed
explosion.
A population.
Right. Because of sexual burnout, right. But also, and you have enough of these little boys sitting in front of computers until they're 35 years of age, maybe addicted to pornography and taking care of themselves, and they don't need to get married. They have no interest in getting married. They have sexuality without relationship, and that's really convenient for them. So, you know, you've got all of these things working. I mean, since 1990, this is a society, I think, Dave, that's just swirling at the very, very bottom of the toilet here. We're getting ready to move down that pipe towards the sewer system, and the nation itself is breaking down because we fundamentally don't have parents raising children. I think the fundamental issue is 64% of kids under six are latchkey, and that produces the 70% of young men not grown up by 30 years of age, up from 30% in 1970. And of course, you do have a few women now out in the market trying to sustain an economy that is just about bust. And as you know, Dave, we suggest a socioeconomic breakdown the next 20, 30 years. Especially with the baby boom generation retiring and the Gen Xers not really interested in getting a grip on life and getting a job and getting a family.
Right. Yeah, you keep pulling on this thread because you'll see that all these things are related. The fact that children are not having babies in high school means they're not getting married, too, because of contraceptives.
Yeah.
You know, why would you – they say buy the cow when you get the milk for free. Well, we have women and men not getting married, which means that women are not being provided for and protected, which means they're out in the workforce. But if they're out in the workforce, there's not much incentive for the men to be out in the force, out in the workforce. So you see that the whole thing starts spiraling down, 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 all because we ignored one of those really basic laws like no fornication.
And parental involvement.
Yes.
Parents are important. And that's why I like this Family Research Council report that just came out. Somebody just emailed it to me, one of our faithful listeners that gets me some of my best stuff. Family Research Council comes out with a brochure called Who Should Decide How Children Are Educated. It's a report that came out evidently this year. And it is written by Jack Klink, who happens to be a U.S. Department of Education employee for 27 years. And there are 5 presidents, 8 secretaries. Director of the Office of Non-Public Education, which is responsible for fostering the participation of non-public school students and teachers in federal education programs and initiatives, something that personally I'm not all that keen on. But this guy's thoughtful, and he's bringing out a very interesting report on whether parents should be more involved in the education of their children. Certainly should parents make the decision on how children are educated. That's the big question poised by the Family Research Council report here. And his answer is he thinks parents should be involved. He says there are 2 different viewpoints here. One is that social engineers and professional teachers, government officials, public education systems are supposed to effectively make educational decisions for children. They're sitting at the control switches and deciding what happens with a nation by controlling what happens with every little kid across the fruited plains of America. But he says he doesn't like that idea. He thinks parents should make those choices. And this, I think, Dave, is a very, very important point to make. He drives it home with this brochure produced by the Family Research Council. He's got 5 critical barriers to parental authority over their children's education. And let's run over these one by one, and I would agree with every one of these, at least to some extent. The first one is the fundamental assumption that the school is an agent of the state rather than the extension of the family. Now, again, Dave, this is very important. He's bringing out a social system, and he's saying that the school really belongs to the sphere of the family, not the sphere of the state. And this is huge. This is something I've been saying across America for a long, long time, spoken to hundreds of thousands of people in the homeschooling movement, and I've underscored this again and again and again, as did Chris Klick and a lot of other guys who have run down this path for the last 20, 30 years. We really believe that the school does not belong to the state, and it does not belong to the church. I think we should throw that in, too, because there are those who say that the school belongs to the church, and the church is supposed to be raising children in the fear and nurture of the Lord. The church is responsible for the education of a child. But here this guy says, ultimately, the fundamental assumption that the school is the agent of the state is wrong, wrong, wrong. Really, the school has got to be an extension of the family. And that's a good, strong point.
Well, I think you should bear with me as I quibble here. The school actually does belong to the state. The children's education belongs to the family.
Yeah.
And I make that distinction because the school is the product of the state. The school is controlled by the state. Now, it's supposed to have some accountability to parents, and I understand that the author here wants the schools to view themselves as a provider where the parents are the consumers or the purchasers. But really, if we want to see this clearly, the school belongs to the state. The problem is the children don't, and neither does their education. That belongs to the family.
Yeah, and Dave, I think the point he's trying to make here is that the state still controls, in terms of funding, the schools. And as long as the state funds the schools and funds the voucher programs and funds the charter schools, et cetera, we got a problem. Because what the government funds, the government controls. Something he doesn't mention in the 22 pages of this report. And that's a problem. No question in my mind, that's a huge problem with Mr. Klink's report here. It gets a little clunky as he still assumes the school somehow belongs to the state in the sense that the state funds the schools. That's a huge, huge problem with the report. But nevertheless, if he's saying that the school / education of a child belongs to the family and the family ought to control it, I would agree with that. My caveat is the family must fund it. If the family doesn't fund it, then you effectively will surrender control. You always do. You always do.
Kevin, this is an important point. The parents may be paying for the school by virtue of property taxes, generally property taxes.
Yeah.
The problem is that's coerced money. So that money is removed from them by force, and then the state has a choice where it's going to spend the money. So the only person who actually has consumer choice here, or freedom of the consumer, is the state. This is like if somebody robs you, they take $100 off your billfold. You don't have the right to tell them where they can spend that $100. You no longer control that money. It may have come from you, but you don't have control of it. And this is the problem in education. The government coerces the money just as the thief took the $100 from you. Now you think you have a right to tell the thief what to do with it? Come on, folks. Let's not be this gullible.
Okay, let's get back to Klink's report here. He says the second critical barrier to the parental authority over their children's education in the modern day is the myth of the common school. And the myth of the common school was the idea that Horace Mann brought forward that said, okay, if you've got all these different ideas out there, different religious perspectives concerning education, you have parochial schools, et cetera, operating all over the place, you're going to have different perspectives taught. And maybe what we can do is we can pull together a common school in a democracy like America, quote unquote, and we can get everybody to agree that this is the approach to education. This is the approach to metaphysics. This will be our approach to origins, to evolutions, to science, to history. This will be the one interpretation of history and science and everything else that we can agree on, and we'll send our kids to pick up these ideas. David, it's an assumption that there's something neutral out there, and these public schools are neutral. Now, it's a huge myth, but almost everybody believes that. They look at these Christian schools, they go, well, the Christian schools are biased towards Christianity. You look at a Muslim school, and Muslim schools biased towards the Muslim faith. As it turns out, the common schools, that is the public school mentality, is really just another worldview. We've just been fooled into thinking, I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of people have been fooled into thinking that these schools are neutral and they're just bringing the facts, and there's no interpretation in the facts. And when they teach the evolution, that's a fact. I mean, they've got all the evidence in the world to teach that there is no God and that God is not important in life. And that God ought not to be a factor in our understanding of history. That man is ultimately God, and man will determine his own law system, and man will determine his own politics. Dave, of course, this is the form of education that has been taught in Harvard and Harvard Law School, and this is the secularism that that has abandoned all of our Christian roots and effectively given root to a secularist socialist state. So my point is that it's a gigantic battle. I mean, anytime you look at education, you're looking at one big old battle, and we would like the freedom to be able to enter the battle and do our own thing instead of the state forcing a monopoly upon all of us and giving a common way of looking at education, knowledge, epistemology, metaphysics, and ethics to every single person in America. See, what I'm saying is we need freedom, at least, to establish some of our own forms of education. We've been fighting for that for the last 40 years. Actually, as we go on to this report, you're going to find out we've been fighting this battle for about 100 years. But the common school idea is that there is some kind of a common belief structure that we can teach everybody and we can all agree on it. But, of course, that's not possible when you've got people with different worldviews operating on planet Earth. And that's what you have, Dave. As you know, in America, there are people who believe that God created this world in 6 24-hour days. And there's a worldwide flood that reestablished our entire crust, and we are going to interpret geology, et cetera, by means of that worldwide flood. And so that's a worldview. That's a worldview perspective on history, geology, and science. And then there are people who don't believe that. Now, they're going to have their own education system. Of course, the people who have control over 80% of American education are going to fool the average Christian into sending his kids to these secular schools and get them well indoctrinated into socialism and the metaphysics of naturalism, materialism.
Kevin, the myth of the common school is to say that we can unite everybody around some common ideas, not a common law system like the Constitution, but around some common ideas. And the biggest enemy of trying to get everybody to be the same so that we get along, because, you know, the Rodney King theology operating here, why can't we just all get along? The greatest obstacle was the bias that of an Orthodox religion. You see, if my children are Christian and my neighbor's children are Muslim, there's no way we're going to agree on anything. Not substantial other than law, and maybe not even that. So the idea of the common school was to try and mix everything in here. Now, this article quotes this Professor Charles Glenn, who's of Boston University, and he says, in the myth of the common school, the common school idea insists that enlightenment is the exclusive providence of public schools.
Yeah.
See, they're beyond all that religious bias.
That sounds
well, horrible
humanistic
man,
to me.
I mean,
yeah.
Sorry, Horace Mann, mm-hmm. Horrible Horace Mann, that's what he believed.
Yeah.
He believed that religion, Orthodox religion in particular, was the enemy of Enlightenment thinking.
Mm-hmm. And we still have people in public schools who believe that. Okay, here's the third critical barrier to parental authority over their children's education per Dr. Klenk in this article from the FRC. And I think this is an important point, but it's somewhat wrongheaded. The denial of public funding for non-public alternatives. Now, that's a huge problem for him. He wants public funding for non-public alternatives, which is interesting. Now, that's partially because he was a public employee in the non-public education sector of the Department of Education for 24, 27 years out of his career. So, of course, he wants more public funding for non-public alternatives. And what I would say is what the government funds, the government controls, and the difference between vouchers and tax credits is that we keep our money and we decide what to do with it rather than subject our money to government fiat and government control. And the government then regulates how we spend our money, which it always does. It always does. It always does. He acknowledges that it's very, very difficult for any kind of a Christian school to spend public monies because of the establishment clause, although it doesn't violate the establishment clause. He makes that point, but it's going to be hard for anybody who's spending that non-public money on anything that is somewhat Christian or somewhat religious, although we all know that every perspective has a religious worldview perspective to it. All right, so here's the fourth point. I would, again, disagree with point number three because it's not going to be helpful. If we grab more public money, that public money is going to be controlled by the powers that are.
Well,
and we're not going to have any control over how that money is spent. Or if we do, it'll be short-lived. And then you have bureaucrats coming into your life and telling you how to spend that money and how to run your schools. And we don't want that. So the solution is defund. But that's something good old Klenk's probably not going to agree with here.
So what we want to do is agree with point four, just denial of public funding, and put our period right there.
Yeah.
You know, the government really doesn't have much business, constitutionally speaking, in the education of children.
And
that
should belong to us. That's a fundamental issue, but it's an issue that I tell you what, Dave, it's going to be hard to get some even conservative Republicans to agree on. I mean, they're not going to say defund the public schools. They know that's the real answer. And they know that unless you defund the public schools, you're not winning this battle. But for right now, it's not going to make it on the FRC brochure. I mean, it's just not going to make it here. Number four, and that's why we broadcast from our basement out here on the Eastern Plains of Colorado. We don't have really nice brochures like
we're
this.
Defunded.
Yeah, we've been defunded. Okay, point number four, the attempt to compel parents to send their children exclusively to public schools. And this one's powerful. This is very, very important. He says in 1922 in the state of Oregon, you want to know how socialistic, how communistic, how liberal people were in Oregon in 1922. By the way, they're still just about as bad in Oregon. Oregon's one of the worst states in the union when it comes to conservative values, any kind of belief in, you know, freedom and liberty. Hey, they hate that kind of stuff in Oregon. But in 1922, voters approved a referendum requiring all children between the ages of 8 and 16 to attend public schools. That was 1922, and there were no exceptions to it, no exceptions. But then after the referendum passed in 1922, two private schools, a Catholic school run by a Society of Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary and the Hill Military Academy, challenged the constitutionality of the new law. It was heard by this U.S. Supreme Court in 1925 in Pierce versus Society of Sisters, and by God's grace, the freedom won out, and private schools were enabled to engage there in the state of Oregon in 1925. That was by far the most important court case in the history of America when it comes to the freedom allowed to private schools and later to homeschools in the 1970s and 1980s. All right, so they make the point that there is an attempt to compel all parents to send their children exclusively to public schools. And he says he roots it in Plato. Remember, Dave, how I've talked about how children are in common, no parent shall know his own offspring, nor any child his parent. He quotes that. I mean, I quote it all the time, just about every single talk I give at homeschool conferences. This is the humanist ideal. This is it, friends. You got to get the kids away from the parents, and you give them to professionals. He talks about Sparta putting boys in barracks at age 7, assigning their education to official guardians, who actually turned out to be homosexuals, but oh well. That may be the direction that some of these public schools are headed, at least in California. After the French Revolution, 1789, he talks about leaders of the revolution, George Jacques Danton, not Rousseau, but Danton, told the National Convention in the 1780s in France, it's time to reestablish the grand principle that children belong to the Republic more than they do to their parents. And he said that ideology is still alive and well in the U.S. of A. All right, then number five, the fifth reason or critical barrier to parental authority over the children's education right now in America that works in the craw of educators across America is this idea of professionalization, unionization, and the insulation of public schools. Public education has become highly professionalized and unionized. This change has led to a dramatic shift in power from parents and the public to public school employees. John Dewey and his fellow progressives put in place lasting organizational reforms with the goal of shifting power from local politicians to educational professionals. They weakened local school boards. School districts were consolidated. Schools were enlarged. Teachers were required to be state certified. Teachers were compensated by a standard salary schedule and protected with tenure. And principals were required to have teaching experience and take credentialed courses, et cetera, et cetera. So, Dave, again, this idea of centralizing and standardizing control all across America, eventually to the U.S. Department of Education, which, by the way, has strengthened exponentially in the last 12 years thanks to George W. Bush and Barack Obama. But again, the Department of Education did not exist prior to the 1970s. But because we have this increasing centralization of funding, you have the increased centralization of control. The whole idea being the more you can fund it, the more you can centralize control in the state departments and in the Department of Education in Washington, you will eventually see a less parental control on the local level, certainly less control on the part of school boards. And, Dave, you have seen that. I mean, I tell you what, if you've been sitting on school boards for the last 85, 95, 105 years, you are going to see that local school boards and parents have very, very, very little control of what happens, especially when so many states are now given to these federal dollars, Dave. I mean, you would not believe how many federal – I mean, there's a number of states, I think it's almost the majority of states, I just read this report, get their number one source of income is not the local sources, it is the federal government. The federal government's the number one source of control and funding of these local state governments, which means that the federal government has far, far more control than the local districts do and the local parents that sit on these school boards.
Well, Kevin, normally we say what the government funds, the government controls, and that's a truism. But what's really insidious about public education is they've actually given up some of that control through collective bargaining to the NEA, the National Education Association.
Huge. That's huge.
The NEA is not a government institution. You do not get to vote for a member of the NEA.
Yeah.
You can't remove NEA from office if you don't like the way they
and
work.
And yet they control the shooting match in just about every district across this America.
So what's really insidious about this is those who control the NEA, which tend to be your communist socialist types, are the ones that are controlling the content of education and the form of education in the public schools. It's when you couple that with compulsory education laws, you understand that the government isn't taking your kids. Karl Marx is taking your kids.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, way, way more government control over 120 years. But what the report says, and this is a positive, friends, since 1993, we're starting to see parents come back in America. Parents are coming back. In 1993, 80% of children attended public schools. Now it's 73%. Friends, again, we're seeing way, way more parents getting involved. They're making choices. Now, maybe their choices are more public schools. And that may end up with more government control. But a lot of them are choosing home education, and that's a point that's made by this report from the Family Research Council. The good news, parents are saying the public schools are not cutting it. 52% of parents with children in assigned public schools were very satisfied with children's education compared to 79% of parents of children in religious private schools very satisfied with their children's education. Friends, parents are increasingly dissatisfied with what's going on in the public schools, and there are parents. There are parents all the time that love their kids and want the very best for their children, and they find out that maybe they better start making those decisions themselves. Maybe they ought to start getting involved in their children's education, especially in the decline of the social systems, the cultural systems, and education systems around us. And Dave, that's why our intro seminars at our Christian Home Educators of Colorado office down in Parker, Colorado are just packed out just about every time I go down there. I do it 3-4 times a year still after 12 years of doing these intro seminars. And almost every time I'm really surprised. I mean, you've got a group of people just packing that place out. And it's what's neat is it's not just moms, it's dads as well. Dads and moms are coming out to our intro seminars. They're getting involved. They're getting interested. They know that if they're going to salvage their children in this generation and the next, they're going to have to get involved in a very, very important way. Friends, as we wrap up the program, I just want to encourage you to grab a copy of my book, Upgrade, The 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. It summarizes what I believe to be the rock-bottom, solid reasons to homeschool your children, certainly, but to understand the biblical principles that undergird a godly education for your children. If you're looking for the best education, you've got to go to the Word of God and flesh those things out. I have summarized 10 basic secrets to the best education for your child in my book, Upgrade, available at kevinswanson.com. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.